Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to another edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you for spending some time with me on your Saturday. I know you have a lot of things you could be doing. I'm honored that you're here with me. This was a pretty busy week for, I imagine, a whole bunch of us. It's one of those weeks where a whole lot of things are happening. This week, I actually had the honor of interviewing Professor Robert Reich. I don't know if you guys remember him. He was the Secretary of Labor for President Clinton, and we interviewed him on Move to Amend, on the Move to Amend Reports radio show that I do over there. And he was actually there to talk about wealth and income inequality, and also to talk about his new film. I think it's called, what is it called? Have it here, somewhere. Inequality for All. It's just been released, and I think it's here in Houston. I have a friend who, Dr. Theis, who told me he actually went over in Austin to see it when he came to our Austin Convergence for Move to Amend. So I don't know if any of you listened to it yet. It's at my blog site. Please check it out. He had a whole lot to say. And then we had Brian Miller from another group. I think Brian Miller is actually with the group called, what is it called? You know, I guess... I need to start taking some more stuff for my head because I forget a whole lot these days. Anyway, he's with UFE. He actually wrote this book called The Self-Made Myth, which actually talks about the mythology that those who have actually become billionaires, millionaires, trillionaires, well, I don't know if any trillionaires, somehow they're innately or they somehow are so much better than the rest of us, or that somehow they deserve to have had that capital better than the rest of us. It was a great 1-hour show with Professor Reich and with Brian Miller. So if you get a chance, go to my website. It's also on this post that I have here for the show. Please check it out. It's a pretty good show. I had an interesting occurrence this week as well. I wrote a friend of mine, she sent me a link to Freedom Works. It had a blog from a guy, what was his name? I don't remember his name off the top of my head. But anyway, he wrote a blog, and it sounded like he was in sheer panic. The name of the guy was Shane Wright from Freedom Works. And I just want to read the snippet that caught my attention and kind of made me write the blog post, because it was like, I think this is what I am seeing as well. He had a pretty big blog post, but the part that was of interest is he said this: What I witnessed in Austin this weekend shook me to the core. This isn't simply an ideological grassroots battle. We are up against a full-fledged frontal assault from the entire liberal political machine. Battleground Texas is well-funded, motivated, highly organized, and damn good at what they do. We are fighting an uphill battle to keep Texas reliably red, which has trickled-down effects across the country. Later on in his post, he said something to the effect that, assuming Texas becomes blue, never again for generations will there be a Republican president. Hey, look, I don't play that game. I don't really, that's not really true at all, but I understand what he really means. But people are starting to see people react in Texas, and I think nationally it's going to be seen very soon that we mean business out here in Texas and that we're no longer going to sit down and let a false body politic run the show out here. There were some great pieces of information that came out this week. First of all, Chris Hayes, the jobs report came out. The jobs report was actually pretty good because the narrative on the right is that Obamacare is killing jobs. And not only is Obamacare killing jobs, but Obamacare is relegating us to a part-time employee-based society. Guys, these companies are no longer going to hire you full-time. They're going to give you a part-time job to keep you under that 30-hour mark so that they don't have to give you Obamacare. Well, Chris Hayes came out with, actually interpreted a lot of what came out in the BLS, and not only did he interpret that, but he extrapolated that from not to the future, but he actually brought the data in from the past and showed that actually pre-Obamacare, the country has been moving towards a part-time economy to some extent. I mean, not fully, but to some extent. But what he also showed in the long last jobs report is that people were actually hiring more full-time jobs. In other words, the rate of people going to part-time actually declined. So it's completely the opposite of what the narrative is from the right. So that was some good information. There is another blog post that I wrote having to do with the genesis of the Tea Party. You should check that out. I think I called it Proof Tea Party Founded as Bogus AstroTurf Movement by Billionaires. And, you know, this is some information that's been out there for a while, but there is a guy that decided to put his foot into the to actually give it some more validity. He did a little bit more research and found quite a bit more information. So check out that blog post. He actually found website Tea Party websites from 2002 funded by the same Koch brothers, which were the offshoot of Freedom Works, one of the, we just spoke about Freedom Works as well, one of those organizations that are out there pushing right-wing propaganda and teaching people how to pretty much vote against their own interests. So that was also an important blog that was released this week. Now, yesterday on Chris Hayes, Reagan's OMB director came out, and he actually had quite a bit to say about, you know, I don't want folks to believe we're ganging up on the Republican Party, but when you have a party that is becoming a clear and present danger to the well-being of the country, not only the country as a whole, but individuals within the country, actually having them do things that are against their own interests, having them do things that will hurt them fiscally, having them do things that will hurt the future of their children, it is important that we continue to keep the pressure on and lay things out and educate people. Well, Stockman came out yesterday on Chris Hayes, and I want to read a little thing that he had to say because this was quite interesting. And you can go to the blog piece. I have the video of it as well. But he said, this isn't surprising. Well, I think I better read this quote from Chris Hayes before. Chris Hayes says, Now former Congressman David Stockman, Republican from Michigan. He was a director of the Office of Management and Budget under Reagan. He is the author of The Great Deformation, The Corruption of Capitalism in America. You are someone who has kind of been in and out of the conservative movement. You are kind of a purgee in certain ways. How do you kind of understand this? And Stockman replied, this isn't surprising. The Republicans are no longer a political party. They are a gang, a coalition of ideological gangs. You have the neocons, the tax cons, the social cons, and just cons. On the fundamentalists, on the fundamental fiscal issues, they don't agree at all. It's totally fractured. The neocons want a bigger defense budget. We have a $650 billion war machine. They did not get the memo that the Cold War ended over 25 years ago. There are a few thousand terrorists left. You don't need a war machine that big. By the way, when Clinton left the White House, it was $400 billion in today's dollars. So they argue we can't do sequester. We ought to be cutting much more so that divides the party. Then you have to the tax cons who still believe in the magic napkin. Just grow your way out of it. We've had 30 years to prove you cannot. We have the social cons, the social issue people who don't care about anything. And then all the Republicans who have been talking about big spending who won't stand up and take on Social Security means testing. Not cutting the people who need it, but then Chris Butson and says, I would love nothing more as someone who does not want to see means testing for Social Security, but I would love nothing more than the Republican Party to take your advice and come out for means testing for Social Security. No, you guys know exactly where all of that is going. Anyhow, what's the real mission today? This week was quite a bit upsetting for me, mostly from liberals. I don't want to quite say weak-spined liberals because there were a lot of those who complained the rollout of Obamacare that weren't weak-spined. They were just attempting to be too ideologically pure. And in that light, you know, it kept on growing and growing and growing. And suddenly, what I realized is that these guys were becoming their own enemies because they were given all the fodder. They were given all the material to the right wing. It wasn't their intent, but they were given all the material to the right wing to actually attempt at harming American citizens from getting health care. So whereas they should be doing no harm, the liberal media, so-called liberal media, was actually doing harm. So I wrote a piece for that will be on, not Huffington Post, but on Daily Coast, the front page tomorrow. I think it's probably going to drop at around 3:30. But you guys get the first stab at it. And what I'd love to hear, if you agree with it, if you see my point, and let's talk about it. Also, there's a piece on the Daily Coast from, I'll bring that up a little later, from somebody who said, hey, folks, yeah, the website is not all that well right now. Actually, it's a lot better now. I've been on it. Actually did my application. But there are ways for you to get your health care today using the means available under Obamacare today if you want to get your health care for January 1st today. So that's possible. But anyway, the title of my piece is going to be Real Liberals in the Media Must Stop Hyperventilating. Here it goes. And please, folks, I want to hear your honest opinion, whether you agree, you disagree, what you think. But this is my take. I get it. Conservatives do not believe in government. They believe government is bad and inefficient. As such, one expects ineptitude in their governance. Liberals believe in government. We, the people. Government is good and necessary. Government is competent. The launch of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, healthcare.gov was buggy and problematic. The healthcare.gov website's performance is contrary to government that works. Customers' first experience of healthcare.gov, one of three entry points to the Obamacare exchanges, was not pleasurable. It took me 3 days to get an application in Texas. I started on October 1st, right when it opened. As a software developer, I thought the rollout of healthcare.gov, given its complexity, would be next to impossible to accomplish in less than a year. I knew it would have a lot of problems upon release. Much smaller undertakings had launches this buggy. Let me stop here for a second because I have a link to another post that I wrote that showed what it took from the inception of Social Security, the difficulty, President Bush's drug program, how difficult and buggy it was. Likewise, the SSI program, how they had the same types of computer malfunctions. All these things, none of this is new. They happened under both administrations. And not only that, but each time, whenever it occurred under Republican administrations, we had the Republican Congress people saying, these things need some time, and that's what we got from them. And the interesting thing is Democrats at that time were always interested in providing that necessary time, and not only doing so, but being a part of the solution, unlike what we see today, rooting for failure. I continue with the blog. After listening to the hearings today, it is even more shocking that it was marginally functional under the load it was bound to receive. The healthcare.gov website was tested 2 weeks before launch. Generally, sites of this complexity are tested for months and then released to a small subset of its intended audience. This is not a static website. It is a portal that simplifies the access of healthcare by validating income, insurance type, family structure, and much more. Reading between the lines in the hearing, it was evident that everyone knew the site would have problems. They did not form a circular firing squad, but an aura of plausible deniability in front of Congress. It is my impression that a justifiable political choice was made. Republicans are very good at what they do. They cannot govern, but they are efficient in obstructing. Democrats and liberals are sometimes too self-judgmental. Many times, instead of fighting for their values and principles, they take a path of least resistance. A delay in order to test for a near-perfect release was untenable. 2014 is an election year. There is a good chance that as Republicans spin a delay as a fatal link in the law, many Democrats would become parties to killing it with 1,000 cuts. A buggy release would be alpha and beta tested in real time. As more and more people sign up for the coverage under healthcare.gov, the exchanges, it becomes nearly irreversible. Liberals need to simply stop hyperventilating. This week, Joan Walsh wrote the most sensible Salon piece about the buggy launch of healthcare.gov and its coverage by hyperventilating liberal journalists. She gently and respectfully slapped Ryan Lisa, Think Progress, and Ezra Klein for hyperventilating. Many took exception to her critiques. Many wanted liberal purity. after all, what distinguishes liberals from the Republicans is absolute honesty. Liberals call a spade, right? Chris Hayes had both Joan Walsh and Ezra Klein on the show to air their dispute. It was the first time I did not like Ezra Klein, who is an excellent journalist. Absolutist, overbearing moral indignation for being questioned on his tone of objectivity reporting was completely uncalled for. What was more upsetting is he did not know what he was talking about. From a software development point of view, he was not qualified to assert as he did success or failure of the functional specs of healthcare.gov's backend. His unwarranted critiques were just as scary and detrimental to those yearning for the benefits of Obamacare as are false assertions by Republicans. He allowed himself by his tonality to be used as the liberal poster boy detailing Obamacare's failure. Good reporting does not mean just laying out the facts. The purpose of the press is to ensure transparent government. It is a check on government. Reporting carries responsibilities as well. Where two factions within a government are at war, it is the responsibility of journalists to be truthful, but to minimize the possibility that truth will be used to do harm. Klein said he does not care who his reporting hurts. He just reports the facts. That is naive. Many seasoned journalists before Klein knew that in the best interest of the country, exceptions are made to ensure their reporting did not become a catalyst for others to do harm. During the week, there were many other liberals, other purists on television complaining about problems with healthcare.gov's potential to cause people to give up. It shows how many live in ivory towers. It shows how many of our liberal journalists fail to understand those they purport to care about. The millions of Americans that have been yearning for insurance will keep trying. The millions of young people that are responsible will eventually sign up. It is silly to believe if one is dying from thirst, they will not keep trying the tap till water flows. Journalists must do their jobs. The president says Obamacare is not a website. That is a fact. The law has already done much for the vast majority of Americans. It made it illegal for insurance companies to rescind policies. It removed caps insurance companies used to maximize profits at the expense of the middle class folks. Effective in January, pre-existing conditions cannot cause denial of coverage. Children up to the age of 26 can remain on parents' policies. The donut hole for the elderly is being closed. Small businesses receive subsidies to help with insurance. There are controls and support for clinics and various other healthcare concepts that go completely unreported. Healthcare.gov is one of the portals to the implementation of Obamacare for the other 15% of Americans, those left behind completely by insurance markets. It was bound to be a difficult task. 15% of a population does not have political voice. While many may be more concerned with journalistic purity or liberal purity, those suffering the effects of economic, health, or political marginalization cannot. It is time for liberals in the media to stop hyperventilating. Report truthfully, but with proper context that does not scare, but inform. Otherwise, you, the liberal media, would be nothing more than Fox News Lite. Folks, what do you think? 620-620. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm talking to you.
Jack Golding.
Sir Golding.
Yeah, okay, I'm just going to make a statement, and then I'm going to hang up.
Go for it, Jack.
Okay. People, most of these commentators have been bastardizing the word conservative. Conservative means slow progress. I mean, slow
exactly.
progress. Not turning back the clock as
exactly.
the Tea Party is does. Okay. Liberal is maybe a little bit faster, but the thing to do is you avoid talking about labels. I think you'll be a lot better off.
Yes, sir. I think you're Jack, you are absolutely correct. When you talk about labels in general, if we could avoid labels, and 210 will be coming to you next. And folks, if you want to talk, please remember to hit 1 so that you can get into the conversation. We are Coffee Party here, Jack. You know what we believe. We believe in civility. We also believe in transpartisanship. We really, really do. I do. I am a partisan, but when I'm wearing my Coffee Party hat, I generally would prefer not to. However, these are different times. These are times where people's lives people's lives right now are on the line. And I will not, as somebody who has a small voice, but a voice that is heard, not actually call a spade a spade. So, Jack, if you have anything else to say before you hang up, or what else do you want to tell me, my friend?
Okay, okay. I think we should have more patience with the I tend to be an impatient person anyway.
We all do, my friend. We all do.
I think it is all a tempest in a teapot.
Yes.
I believe that the, as far as Obamacare, which I don't like the term, goes, we will, it'll be resolved.
And I am with you, my friend.
Within 3 months.
Jack, I am a software guy, okay? And I agree with you 100%. So thank you very much for calling, my friend.
Take care.
Look here, buddy. Stay with us. Whenever you want to come back, just let me know. I'll put you on mute. Before I go to 210, I have something I want to say, because inside of the chat room, somebody named, let's see who the person says, does Egberto Willis call a spade ace? 3.5 years to get this website right. Wrong. And that is what I talk about when I say we don't have the people giving information to the citizens. No, they did not have 3.5 years to develop this website. Absolutely not. Rules were being written. Fights were being held in court. Which means you cannot have, as a software developer, I'm telling this as fact. This is not conjecture here. A functional specification cannot be completed until you have the regulations written. And not only that, but because we do not know which states are going to be within the system, not only don't we know which states are going to be within the federal system, but we also do not know the regulations that each state will have that we have to abide by within that system. Let's go even further. Given the fact that in many of the red states, they were pushing all types of objections and walls up so that to try to slow this thing down, none of this information got over in timely fashions. Now, if you watched the hearing, and I made sure to watch the entire 4 point whatever hours of hearings. If you watched it, you saw those guys walk a thin line. They didn't want to get the Republicans mad with their answers, and they didn't want to alienate their employers, in this case, the administration. And that's why in the piece that I wrote, I stated specifically that they didn't form a firing squad. They created plausible deniability, without being able to take on suits if they were to come. If you took a look at that, was a completely legal setup there. The fact of the matter is, if our reporters want to hyperventilate, they should hyperventilate on all the problems that came up for the making the site. Now, I made another important statement that has to be taken into account. It really, the website was not ready to go hot. You don't go hot after 2 weeks for a system this complex. It was a political decision that had to be made. And I explained why, in my personal view, that political decision was the right political decision. And I think for all practical purposes, all those who have the same opinion that I have in this respect were vindicated this week when we saw a whole lot of the weaker Democrats starting to waver a bit. Not yet into a big mark, but they started to waver a bit. But I'm going to stop my talking since a lot of people are starting to get on and get people talking here. 210, I think this is my brother from San Antonio. How you doing, my friend? Is this John?
Yes, it is.
Talk to me,
always
John.
Great to talk to you, Egberto.
Great talking to you too, my friend.
Yeah, I just want to congratulate you on your post entitled The Freedom Works. You were speaking about it earlier, what I witnessed in Austin this weekend shook me to my core. It was the most successful blog you put up on Daily Code. It had 813 recommendations from the community.
Wow.
And
that was humbling.
It was great. It was great to see. And so for those who haven't read it, I would highly recommend it. One thing I do want to remind people that the 81st Texas Legislature, which was voted in 2008, basically there were 76 Republicans and 74 Democrats in the House. So it was pretty close. You know, that was during the Obama election. And so it's not, you know, even though right now it's 95-45 in the House for Republicans, you know, within a few election cycles, this will be changing. And it just goes to show it wasn't that far in 2008. And also in the year 2000, the Democrats actually had a majority in the House at 78-72. So it hasn't been that long ago when it was close or even when they had a majority. And I also want to talk a little bit about the Texas politics. It's a rare event when a figure can come out of nowhere to win a major position. That's why I think it's really important that politicians who the public are somewhat familiar with are if they start running now and not wait for future years when demographics are more favorable for Democrats.
Right.
And I was in favor of Wendy Davis actually running against Cornyn because of all the anti-Washington sentiment. I thought she had a better chance to win because of Cornyn's favorables were lower than Abbott's. But she made her choice, and I think there is a possibility that she can win, and there's a lot of energy, obviously, and you're pushing that energy, and I think that's great. But, you know, even at that point, it's going to be hard to pass an agenda, you know, if they have the House and the Senate are still Republican. So it'll be a matter of an endurance and see how many vetoes, kind of like what Schweitzer did in Montana,
right,
that happened.
But you know what, John? I have something to tell you. Let me tell you one thing. I just interrupt for one particular reason. Assuming Wendy Davis wins, and I do think, and by the way, 832 and 724, you guys are next. Just in case, I think if she wins, and I think there's a very good chance that she wins because of the marginalization of women that's occurring. When you have a judge come out like she did earlier this week, who couldn't vote until, you know, who had to jump through hoops to vote, and you know that's going to happen to a whole lot of women, it's going to empower, it's going to get, you start taking away these types of rights from women, they get pissed off. And I think that is what's starting to happen to Texas women right now. They will get pissed off, and their husbands, brothers, and everybody else as well will get pissed off. And that is why with Battleground Texas, we are so successful in getting so many people registered. I mean, we are ahead of schedule for that difference that Bill White and Perry, you know, difference between the Bill White and Perry elections. We are on a race to beat that amount in registration. But that said, I think it's more than that with Wendy Davis. I think Wendy Davis is going to pull in a whole lot of Republican women, including Perry's wife. Because if you listen to Perry's wife, you'll see that she's pretty much on the same page, but they have to try to attempt to keep her mouth, you know, her mouth shut. One last thing, and that is, I don't think things like if she gets elected, I think a lot of Republicans probably would prefer Wendy to get elected for one reason. They have to take the Medicare expansion to Obamacare. They have to take it. We're the medical center of the country with our Texas Medical Center down here. No other medical center is as big and as well-known around the world. And to have 25% of the population without insurance, after Obamacare kicks in January, it probably reduce it to, I don't know, probably 15% or so. But even above that, I think what we're going to find is that they're going to need a face-saving way to accept that law. And the way they do that is to have a Democratic governor. They can say, well, you know, you guys elected a Democrat, so that's what she did. That's my hope for her winning, because I know a lot of Texans are hurting, and that in our state, I'm not speaking about any other state, in Texas, Republicans are a clear and present danger to the lives of our citizens. And I make no bones in stating it that way. Go ahead, John, and then I need to go to 724.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, I completely agree with you. But I guess I'm really thinking more about the Senate race, because I do think Cornyn is vulnerable, and I do hope either Bill White or either one of the Castro brothers or Anise Parker or even Letitia Van de Put does run, so we can have somebody that some people, you know, are somewhat familiar with.
Who do you think would be the best person?
Well, I mean, according to polling, it would be Bill White, but he said he's not going to run for any office. I mean, he was actually ahead of Perry, you know, in the poll in January, the PPP poll in January.
Wow,
but,
didn't know that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the polls after that, that happened in late June, he was behind. But I mean, you know, it's I mean, we'll see. They really haven't done any polling. I mean, there was one poll that came out once Wendy Davis announced, and she was down by the same amount, which is 8, but there were also 50% that were undecided. And
right.
So, I mean, that's a huge undecided factor.
That poll really doesn't mean anything, yeah.
She was down 8 points before, but I do think that you know, we can't just have these people who nobody knows about. I mean, you know, the Castro brothers, or I mean, we need to have people that people are familiar with. I mean, it would be great to just have somebody, you know, out of obscurity come, and that happens rarely. But most of the time, people vote in somebody who's ran before, and people who they know about, who has some kind of a national figure, you know.
John,
so
you're absolutely right. I'm keeping your mic hot, because unlike some other folks, you know, remember last week, I know you know when to jump in, but I want to keep you hot, because there are a lot of times you keep us on our toes, especially with the stats that you normally know. But in the meantime, I want to bring in 832, then I'll go to 724. 832, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, Egberto. How are you doing?
All right. Who am I speaking to?
This is Pankage.
Pankage, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much. I think, Egberto, my friend, we need to wake up to the truth.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do, and we need to come to the realization, my friend, that both parties, including the president, they are all owned by the corporations. Whether you want to also call it, there is a shadow government, there is a cabal, and there is an Illuminati, and they control everything. And there is one country, one nation, that is dictating America's foreign policy. And that nation is Israel.
Okay,
and
let me stop you right there, Pinkage. Let me stop you right there for one reason only, okay? Because I agreed with you with everything that you said up and until you applied Israel and said that somehow Israel was the heart of all the world's problems. The reality is it's a plutocracy and it's a world plutocracy. It's not just
it's a world plutocracy. I agree.
It's a world plutocracy. And by the way, when you talk about all the parties being owned, brother, mm-hmm. I agree with you. Now, over on the, on Facebook, we had some issues that I discussed with you. And what I really meant to tell you is you have to be careful. Look, it is true that we have a corporatocracy, but it's also mm-hmm. true that there are some folks that are that are better in the short term for the middle class, and we must leverage that. We are mm-hmm. in a game. The politics is a game. And what some people do is they go mm-hmm. on the fringe and assume that everything that they read on the fringe, because it has an air of plausibility, is somehow mm-hmm. true. That's the issue I had with some of the postings that you made.
Well, let me tell you the good news.
Yeah, what's the good news?
The good news is that there is going to be a transitional government that is going to be coming, and I guarantee you what.
Okay, great. Well, you keep me posted, and you stay in touch with me, my brother. I'm going to get on to 724, and thank you for calling, and stay with me. 724, who do I have the honor of speaking with? And 713, you'll be next. 724?
Hi, Egberto. It's Greg in Pittsburgh. How are you today?
Hey, Greg. How you doing? Were you going to be the president or vice president with Rodriguez? I don't remember.
Again, I'll have to repeat, if nominated, I will not run, and if elected, I shall not serve.
How you doing, Greg?
If we're talking about the coffee party, I might take that back.
All right.
Hey, I'm really glad to hear you talking about the IT side of this equation, I guess, is kind of how I would characterize this. I've been in the technology business over 3 decades myself. I've worked for software companies. I've even written a little code myself in the past, although I claim no credibility when it comes to understanding what goes into a system this big. All I can say is this, and that is it's not a perfect process no matter how much time you get for it. We've all been around, those of us in the technology business have been around enough projects, presumably, I know I have, speaking personally, with companies of varying sizes that have developed systems and not meant to serve 30 million people, mind you. This system is meant to serve a huge portion or a huge audience. We've been around software projects that, no matter how much testing went into it, something didn't work right. My suggestion to the American populace is a couple of things, actually. Number one, stop listening to people talk about technology who don't know anything about it.
That would include most
of the media world. You know, that if they don't have the first clue as to what goes into the design, the development, the testing, the launch, and the maintenance of a huge software and technology system like this, then in my mind, guess what? You can have an opinion, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't count. It has no relevance to the discussion. The second thing I would see, go ahead.
Greg, keep that thought because it's very important. But somebody just said how many people are on Facebook and it works pretty darn well. That is the kind of statement that generally upsets people that are very technical. Let me first say, I've written operating systems from the beginning. In other words, I don't know if you remember when I used to write codes with ones and zeros and not even assembly language. I've been doing it since then.
Yeah, me too.
Languages today are different in that you're so isolated from the CPU now that things are so high level. Even though it's easier to write code, it's also more error prone because you don't know what that person who wrote the underlying very low code was thinking, how much security they had within it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I brought processors up from the beginning. I just want to state that for the person who is listening, as wondering if, well, why can I be so bold in making the technological statement of this system? I know what goes on right down to the CPU level, right down to that level, the bootstrap. Now, that said, each of these, and I have to believe it because, nobody would have gotten a contract otherwise. each of these individual components were sent to different contractors, and they all had their functional specs with their inputs, outputs, et cetera. You know about that very well, Greg. And I'm very sure they all worked, and I'm very sure they all were stressed out, but you and I know things about the deadly embraces and so forth that happened in not only multiprocessing, but multi-action types application. It is no way similar to Facebook. Facebook is very easy programming. And for those who talk about, well, Facebook has a billion users. Yeah, Facebook is a simple static website with plug-in hooks. It's simple. Folks, it is not simple to create the type of website that has to interface with databases of legacy type applications and other type applications. It is difficult. I don't care who is building it, but there are restrictions. But anyway, Greg, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I needed to get that technological part in.
No, that's exactly the sort of reality check that is, in my mind at least, missing from the discussion so far. And that is the reality that large systems developed by, let's remember, private companies hired and contracted to do this. This failure, and it is in some respects, it has to be counted as, you know, less than optimum. It's a failure, if you want to call it that. I think, frankly, that's a little harsh. It's the result of, and let's remember this, the fact that it's a popular idea which is being burdened by a great deal of demand. If no one was logging in, if no one was attempting to log in, if that were the case, if it was sitting there silent with the crickets chirping, well, then, you know, somebody could say the idea was bad, and regardless of whether the technology was any good. But it's actually the reverse. And so
right.
On some level, we should be looking at this as extremely positive. Now, the other thing I wanted to say, and you were touching on this too, and that is this. I've spent three decades around IT people. They tend to be really, really smart people, and they, if given the chance, will fix this problem. Let them fix it. Why should we suddenly believe that this is some sort of unrecoverable catastrophe? You know, it's all political. People are using this opportunity to point fingers at a project that was resisted from day one by half of the political spectrum, and now they want to claim that, you know, it's an abject failure and I told you so. No IT project could have succeeded under these circumstances, regardless of how much time was dedicated to it. And again, I want to just reinforce this fact. This was not a system developed by government employees. If you're going to put the finger of blame on someone, it needs to be CGI Federal and QSSI. But again, no one's perfect. This is a system that has huge potential and will be around for a long time. Let them fix the problems.
Exactly.
And you know what? In a couple of months, it's going to be one of those things where these challenges will be behind us. It'll be forgotten.
Absolutely. You know, let me tell you, and you know, some people are saying, "Well, do you hire incompetent?" I'm coming to you next, 713. And I'm leaving you hot, Greg. The reality is, no. Even the Canadian company that's doing the work, it's not. They're not incompetent because a lot of the engineers, most of the engineers, are American engineers. And I tell you what, we have darn good engineers. As I said, this program. I'm probably going to have to put your mic on hold. This, I guess, it wasn't your mic. Yeah, it was your mic. This project itself, folks. Was not ready to be released in a lot of ways because, like I said, they had two weeks of actual live tests, and this usually takes months. But it was a political release, but I think a necessary political release because, like I explained in the post that will be released next week. But Greg, stay with me. I'm going to 713. 713, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Michelle Michon. Hi, Alberto.
Hey, Michelle Michon. Michelle, folks, she is the curator of the page Texas Women's Alliance. Did I get it right this time?
No, Texas Women's Coalition, but actually we're going to be changing to TWAC, Texas Women's Action Committee.
Texas Women Action Committee. Look, I'm getting old. I can't remember everything all the times now. Anyway, talk to me, Michelle. Let me hear what you got to say.
Yeah, well, the one thing that hasn't been brought up, and it was in an article yesterday in the Texas Tribune, stated, I don't know if you're familiar with the Montreal-based CGI group.
Yes.
Okay. And it provides IT consulting services. They received $1.8 million from the Rick Perry's Texas Enterprise Fund. They're also set to gain another $13.9 million in a contract with the Texas Railroad Commission. And they're based out of Montreal. And I just draw your own conclusions, but I just kind of read the article and thought, no wonder why it wasn't a clean rollout with the ACA.
I was
just wondering what your take was on that.
Yeah. I am not going to go that far because I think that, you know, what Pinkage said, I was a bit upset at Pinkage earlier this week because he was posting a whole lot of stuff that I thought were off the wall, okay?
Mm.
But I don't think a company would purposefully go out there and sabotage a work because they never know who will be in command later. And Pinkage said something that made a lot of sense, and that is...
Yeah, but Egberto, I'm not trying to say that. I'm saying that, mm-hmm. number one, the quality probably wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if they met Perry's expectations, you know, come on.
Oh, Michelle. Michelle.
Come on, let's be real. Oh, and as far
come on,
as...
Michelle, that's so bad of you.
It's the truth. It's the God's honest truth, I'm telling you. Come on. You know?
Actually, look, we are, you know. Yeah, let me tell you something about Texas, though, because Texas has terrible politicians, but Texas has a wonderful bureaucracy. And let me tell you what I mean by that. My wife has lupus, folks, and I tell you guys this all the time, but we have new listeners all the time. And anyhow... She was on the what's known as the Texas High Risk Pool plan, which is a plan that Texas has. I think the price of the insurance is two and a half times what it costs a normal person to get insurance here. Well, it turns out – oh, sorry about that, Greg. Didn't realize that. It turns out that after Obamacare came into effect, there was no longer any need for the high-risk pool because, remember, pre-existing conditions no longer matter. It no longer matters. So they closed that down. How did they spin it in Texas? The average news media in Texas spun it as, the president said, if you had your own plan and liked it, you could keep it. And then they had people displaying, look, Blue Cross is shutting down my wife's plan. Well, Blue Cross is shutting down your wife's plan that costs two and a half times their regular policy because Obamacare now prevents them from being able to do that, and now you will get a new policy if you want from Blue Cross again at a better price. Well, guess what our bureaucracy did here in Texas, Michelle and everybody else? They sent out a letter, and Michelle, I don't know if you actually blogged that post that I did, the letter that my wife received saying that she should go to healthcare.gov and get coverage that will actually be better.
Well, I believe I did.
Excellent. Well, so in effect...
The underlying thing in this, Egberto, too, is just the ADHD. I believe that especially the Tea Party takes advantage of our collective ADHD mentality.
Yes.
You know, the Democrats are saying, let's try to fix it. It's not going to be perfect. But we, as Americans, we can do this. We can get this done. And I don't care what we have. I mean, they just want to tear it down, the Tea Party. You know, I mean, but where's their American pride or spirit? Where's the we can do attitude? It's just non-existent within that party.
What hurts me most, Michelle, is this. It is okay to be partisan. It is okay also to have all these types of fights. But you don't have fights that are going to materially hurt your constituency. You don't have fights that's going to kill people. You don't have fights that's going to maim people. And when we have the lies that when we let me tell you, I made
well you shouldn't, but they do.
Right. And what I'm saying is this is really something new. Now, in my lifetime at least, I don't know how it was in 29, 39, 49, but in my lifetime, this is something new. I mean, even Ronald Reagan, who hated Social Security, saw Social Security work, and for his political expediency, decided that he loved it. Okay? And that isn't a life or death situation, but this healthcare thing is a life or death situation. I can tell you personally, somebody who has a a catastrophic policy, I actually had not done a particular procedure. I don't want to gross folks out, but, you know, the colonoscopy thing. And one of the reasons I didn't do it is I figured I knew my father had polyps. I knew I was 50 at the time, but I knew, well, you know, polyps take about 10 years to really blow up or whatever is what the book says. So I took the chance. And I said to myself, you know what, now that healthcare is in transition and we don't know about the pre-existing condition issues or whatever, I would actually delay doing this because I wanted to make sure that this couldn't ever be used against me for my next policy. Think about how many millions of Americans are making that kind of decision. In other words, foregoing doing things like colonoscopies and all these different issues because they don't want, not because they can't afford to get the colonoscopy or whatever, but because they're scared to do it because they may find a polyp and a polyp then becomes a pre-existing condition, whether benign
well,
or not.
What about all the people that just don't have insurance and don't even have that the luxury of having that worry?
Exactly.
You know, I've lost three friends from cancer. And, for example, one, you know, owned his own small plumbing business.
Right.
And had to go broke, had to lose everything that he had worked so hard for. Had
right.
left a 12-year-old daughter, lost everything, had to, you know. And then the thing of it is there's a waiting time.
Right.
People that aren't in that situation don't understand. Here this man has cancer. Time is of the essence. But there's a six-month waiting list after
right.
you have to sell off all your stuff and spend all your money and go into debt, no more savings, no more anything. You have cancer, and then you have to wait 6 months before you can get on any kind of state insurance, you know, Medicaid. It's insane.
It is pathetic. Michelle, you're right. Now, 210, I think this is John that probably wants to get back in. John?
Yeah, I just want to comment a little bit about what you're saying with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, I basically agree with you. You know, obviously, I agree with you on the policy. I've been, you know, agreeing with you for months on that, and for, you know, decades on it, trying to get single payer. But you know, it is
I'm still
what
working
it is.
On that.
Yeah, I know we both are, but I mean. I guess I just have a little bit more nuanced view. I mean, generally, I do agree with you that the most important thing is to keep the big picture in mind and to actually get health care to people and to help people, and that is the bottom line. I guess, you know, I saw the thing on Chris Hayes' show with Joan Walsh and Ezra Klein, and,
right.
you know, I like them both. And so I kind of had mixed feelings about it. I mean, generally, I you know, tended toward what Joan Walsh was saying, and I agree with what you're saying. But there are a couple points that bother me. One of the thing is what from what I've read that it takes a couple of months to have your actual. What the numbers that you put in to see if you're eligible for a subsidy, those that has to be coordinated with both the IRS and with another place. I think it's Experian is the other
right.
one who has to.
Right.
And so that takes a couple of months to happen. And so that's the thing that I guess bothers me the most. So if you're signing up, you know, today, a couple of months from today is, you know, right near the first. I mean, it's, you know, between Christmas and the first. And so
right.
you're not having much time. I mean, I want everybody to have insurance on the first. And so those people who aren't going to have insurance on the first because of the glitches, that is a problem.
You know what,
so,
John, I want to interrupt you right there because I am with you. I mean, there is no difference between what we think in exactly what you said. I am not – I think I said in the piece, and I would go back to it, but I said I want these guys to report the truth. Not only do I want them to report the truth, I want them to do it with context. Now, you just informed me about something that I didn't know. I'll be honest with you. I simply did not know. I didn't know that there was a two-month period, that it could take up to 2 months to actually get the information from IRS and Experian to make sure that you're good for that subsidy. That said, I think that those are the types of things that can be fixed in this manner. Just like your IRS forms are filled out on faith with the possibility that later on if you lied, you will be, you know, you'll be taken into account or whatever. I think the same thing needs to occur with this healthcare bill. In fact, I was saying, and I don't remember who I told it to, that we could have made this website quite easy. In effect, we all know single payer would have been one point of failure only, which means it would not have failed. But with all these different points of failure here, what we should have done is just created a form that simply took all the information and validated everything on the back end, not put that in the hands of people to have to wait for validation and all that kind of stuff. Because I don't know, have you gone to the site yet and filled out an application?
No, I mean I don't need it, but I mean
right.
the point is that, you know, I mean I don't even think that like you were talking about the IRS. I mean the IRS doesn't. I mean they do random audits. And
right.
So, I mean, this isn't a random audit. Everybody is going to be they're to see if they're going to get subsidies. This has to go through the IRS, and it also. And the second thing is to me just absolutely ridiculous that you have to go through Experian and they have to confirm that. And so, I mean, that is just, you know, ridiculous. But I mean, the other point is this is your projected income, and so
right.
you're looking at let's say you lost your job, you know, at the end of a month ago, you lost your job. How are you going to project what you're going to put in? I mean,
there's
they're basing it on last year's information. Yet, I mean. In the meantime, you could have lost your job at any time during 2013. You could be making less money. You could be making more money. I mean,
okay.
You know,
I have
I mean,
an answer
I
for
understand.
That part. According to the
okay.
website, according to the website, okay, and all these parts are not yet functional because I noticed I tried to play around with the site to go to different areas like modifying certain parts of the application or whatever, there are hooks in there so that when your status change, whether positively or negatively, that you can go in and update it and things would be adjusted accordingly. That the hooks are there for that type of implementation. I don't see it functional yet, but it you can see that was already taken into account because when I went ahead and put in, the last income actually that they could pull for me was from 2011 because I filed as a business late in October. So they didn't have 2012 data. They only had 2011 data, and that's what it automatically pulled. I found that impressive, to tell you the truth, that all of this stuff is so integrated, as bad as it is, that it's fairly well integrated already. But I mean, you can actually go in there and modify your information. And some of the information, it seems, because they're asking you to sign that you're telling the truth and all of that, that it's taken on faith. Now, again, a lot of this has to be done in such a manner that it's easy. Because, again, if you want to claim that a marketplace can work, which you and I, if I understand correctly, we don't want a marketplace. We want one payer. There's no real I mean, a marketplace simply increases inefficiencies. I think both of us agree on that one. So
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I think that functionality would be there. If it's not there, the mere fact that you bring that up, it is something that we as activists have to put out there. But I wanted, in the promo to the show, I told folks that I would actually give information on, in as much as the website, the website is working well for most right now. I went on again yesterday, and it sailed right through without any problems whatsoever. So I'm kind of confident that they must be doing a hell of a lot in the back end that's coming out functional. But that said, the Daily Coast had a thing written up by Ubiquitous A, and the title of it was "Sign Up for Healthcare Insurance Under the ACA Obamacare Right Now in Two Steps." And in effect, what it's telling you is, you know, everybody has access to see the prices for the rates they're going to get in their zip code. I mean, as you know, rates are different in different zip codes and different states, everything. So you can pull that information down now and pull down your app and just go ahead and make a call. From what I've been hearing now, I called it a couple of times. The first time I called somebody, a human being actually answered. I mean, I was able to get directed to a human being immediately. The other time I waited about a couple minutes till a human being came on. I wanted to do this before I came on the air so I could have valid information to tell people. Now, so take a look at this. I'm going to actually put the thing inside of the chat room so that people can have access to a little bit of information on what they can do today if they wanted to have coverage today. Folks, the telephone number is 646-929-2495. Hit 1 to play. I am also going to put that link. I hadn't put it yet in the blog post for the show. I forgot to put it, to tell you the truth. I'm going to add it as we speak. But anyway, John, do you have anything else to add while I kind of update my blog post here?
No. I just one thing that's really bothering me here in the chat room is that, I guess this is Dan, the Press One for Democracy guy. He's just really out of control. I mean,
what is he saying?
He's saying, here's some things that he's saying. He's saying this is what Egberto promotes, hatred, division, and let me see if I can find this, controversy, hatred, and divisiveness. And I just couldn't disagree with him more. I mean, you are an extremely honest, extremely knowledgeable person, and I like Dan. I like whenever he talks about issues, I actually agree with him most of the time. But this whole idea, here we are, in a time that has the most divisive era since the Civil War. And this is mainly because of Republican radicalism. And people understand that. Historians understand that. The American people understand that. I mean, if you look at the numbers from yesterday's Washington Post, ABC poll, I mean, they're overwhelming. 65% of people over 65 who typically voted Republicans have a negative opinion of the Republican Party. 70% of people with a college degree have a negative opinion of the Republican Party. 74% of female with a college degree have a negative opinion. I mean, this was put into place. We've been talking about it for years now, and it was finally solidified in the minds of people because of this, incredible shutdown and debt ceiling debacle. And so, it's really, it's really kind of disturbing when he thinks that both sides are equal. And, it's so ahistorical, and it really, really bothers me, saying that.
First of all, John, thanks, okay? But I don't know, for some reason, Dan always follows me and tells me I'm this and I'm divisive or whatever. I just speak the truth, as you say, and you speak the truth. You come out and say things. I am not going to, you know, I like Dan too. Dan's my board member buddy, but I think sometimes you have to wonder when you're pointing a finger what actually, you know, where all the other fingers are pointing. And that says it all. But above and beyond that, I think what we have to do, especially now, because like I was talking to Michelle before, people are getting hurt. And if you are going, you know, it's like sitting back in a chair, not helping somebody that you're seeing getting beat because you want that person who is beating that other person to continue to like you. You know, let me tell you something else, John, and everybody else. I talk to everybody. In fact, I think Michelle can attest to that because sometimes Michelle gets mad at some of the people that I talk to, right, Michelle?
Yes.
I talk to, I surround myself with Tea Party, Democrats, Republicans. I'm in Starbucks talking with conservatives constantly. And the one thing that we have among each other is respect. We may not believe the same thing, but we can speak. And not only can we speak, but we don't have to tie our tongues when we speak. And in fact, that's a lot of the problems that we have to get over. We have to get over process and start thinking about getting things done. That's what I like about, you know, I mean, of what a whole lot of you do. You get things done.
Yeah, let me just interject one thing.
Sure, Michelle.
You know, my deal with you is, I mean, because of my personal experience, I feel like arguing with a Tea Party or trying to explain facts or anything, it's like, you know, talking to a rock. You're not going to get through. Something's going to have to happen to them personally before
right.
they finally have an epiphany and wake up. You know, anything that you have to say or put on the table, I don't care what resources you provide for them or to them, they're going to reject unless it's from Fox News or from Ted Cruz's mouth.
Michelle, I accept that. 503, I'm coming to you next. Michelle, I accept that. But the way I feel, the way I operate, okay, is – I say what I think I need to say, and I give up on nobody. You know,
I respect that about you. I love you for it, but, you know, and maybe you have the patience for that. I just don't anymore.
That's why Dan is still my brother.
My effort. I want to focus, and mi hermano, I just want to focus my efforts to where I think it can be used
and Michelle,
in the best
we need,
way.
Michelle, we need you to do that because, first of all, folks, go to Michelle's TWAC page. What's the name again?
Texas Women's Coalition. We have right under 9,000 people, and then right over a year, I'm very proud of all of the people on there. I don't allow for women bashing or hate mongering to go on there. It's a liberal progressive Texas page.
And she has done marvels with that page. It's a well-recognized page around Texas, and not only Texas, but around the country. People actually send her direct messages. She has given me quite a bit of stories. And let me first tell you, I want to tell John this. John, that woman that you're hearing there, Michelle, is responsible for the Freedom Works find. And when Michelle finds certain things, she says, hey, you have an avenue to get that out, get it out. So she's very helpful, and not only Michelle, but all you guys that have stuff that need to be promoted, truths that need to get out there, I love when you send it my way. 503, you're hot. 503,
yeah,
I have the honor of speaking with. Hold one second, Michelle. Did you want to say something real quick?
Well, I'm going to have to go because I'm going to that JRR dinner tonight. Woo-hoo.
Okay.
I need Michelle to stay, though.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Okay,
Michelle,
I'm letting my
let me
nails
talk
dry.
To 503.
Okay, okay, all right. I'll
go to
503
and I'll come back to you. Thank you, Michelle.
All right.
503, you're hot.
Hi, Egberto. How are you?
Is this my little brother, Dan?
It's your little brother, Dan. And I was having fun in the chat room and people got all upset, but that's okay.
What's up?
But now I have 3 points to make. But since Michelle has to go, let's start with Michelle. Michelle, have you ever talked to a Tea Partier about crony capitalism and whether they like crony capitalism? Like no bid contracts going to Halliburton, that kind of thing?
I couldn't even get that far.
You're talking about Michelle. I'm just telling you. You ever talk to him about the two wars in the Middle East that we're still engaged in? We have 68,000 troops still deployed overseas. Do you think they're pro that? All I'm saying, Michelle, is you have a lot more in common with them than you think. You're just not talking to them about the things you have in common. If you look for things you have in common and don't go to the divisive things like gay marriage and, you know, women's right to choose, which, of course, we all know should be legal, all of them. But if we just ignore those and we go to where we have in common, you'd actually probably have a really good conversation with a Tea Partier.
Actually, I have a – can I talk or –
Oh, absolutely. Go, Michelle, please. But one at a time,
okay,
though.
Actually, a friend of mine is a former judge from a small town right down the Highway 59, and Tea Partier. And I had a very interesting conversation, and I told at the end, I said, basically, you know, you're an old 60s hippie, and we agree with most of the things. And I said, you know, what they're afraid of is if we ever joined forces and put those divisive issues on the back burner, we could get a lot accomplished. So I'm there with you. I just right now, we're so focused on turning Texas blue, I don't have time for that. You know, they can either, I mean, I'll let Egberto and other people do that. You know, right now I'm trying to inform people. You know, if you realize the last election, the Republicans here in Texas lost their House majority. This can be done and it will be done. They say, well, how was Ted Cruz elected? Well, Texas sent out $20 million to the National Party. We were broke. Paul Saddler didn't have, he didn't even spend $300,000 on his campaign. Ted Cruz spent $5.9 million on media alone. Saddler couldn't even get an article written about him if we begged them to. So,
Michelle,
I mean,
you know that you know that Saddler was broke when I had to represent Saddler in the 8th CDP meeting because he had to drive to San Antonio for the stuff at the same time.
Honey, he drove. I'm friends with his mama. He drove until he blew his truck engine up. I mean, he worked his little tail off to win, but it just didn't happen. He didn't have the support. And that's the whole point. If we want to do this, spend your money. You know,
okay,
people from out of state need to support our candidates, because if we turn Texas blue, the Republicans will never again win the White House.
Michelle, I don't know if you see on my personal page, actually, we're doing some of that. But I think, Dan, 805, I'm coming to you after Dan. Dan, you said you had three things. I think you made your first one.
Yeah, and I'm glad Michelle is open to having those conversations, and I'm glad that she has found common ground. And I think if that's the message that we put out there, not the Tea Partiers are idiots, I'm never going to talk to them again, then the coffee party might as well go away, because that's what we need. That's what
our
mission is.
Dan, I have to tell you, I think sometimes, and I say that with this with love, brother, I think sometimes you have tunnel vision, because I think you are so scared, and I'm not saying this scary, that kind of scared. I'm saying you're so focused on not saying something to maybe upset the other side. You think that that is the real coffee party mission. I'm going to tell you something.
That's not true. Don't put words in my mouth. That's not fair.
I'm saying that, okay, and you can correct that. I'm saying that's my impression, Dan. You can correct my impression. That is my impression.
Okay. Did you hear what Michelle said, Egberto?
Yes,
she said they're scared of what will happen if we combine forces.
That is absolutely.
The only thing that matters is that we combine forces to get money out of politics so that we, blue or red, can actually have a real say in government.
Because right now we don't. That's not enough. Dan, I'm going to tell you why that is not correct, okay? This is why it's not correct. It's not correct for the same reason the alliance between the Tea Party and the Republicans are breaking apart. And the reason it's not correct is this. Here's what you said. You're saying this. And 805, I want to come to you. I tell you what. Let me go to 805 because he's been holding for a long time, and then I'm going to make that argument afterwards or that say what I really want to say afterwards. I'm leaving you hot. 805, you're on. Who am I speaking with?
This is John D. Herrera. And I was wondering if both Michelle and Dan are still on the line.
Yes, they are.
Okay. What Dan just said is correct. What Michelle said is they're afraid if we combine forces. So the only way to do that objectively in the United States of America, because its high law is the Constitution, the only way to do it objectively is to hold a federal convention. There have been fears for years and decades that the politicians have told the people, oh, my gosh, if we ever have a convention, it's going to destroy the Constitution.
John D. Herrera, are you calling from San Francisco?
No, I'm calling from Santa Barbara.
I think you're having a convention, aren't you, a mock convention?
Egberto, I want to get to that. I'm going to try and get through this as quickly as possible because it's a lot of information. So the point here is that the convention clause of Article 5 has been demonized by the powers that be, and they keep us divided, and they keep us afraid of coming together to find our common ground. What Dan said is true. There are elements of our political reality that we have in common, and one of them is Americans want to take money out of politics. Everyone does. The only people that want the status quo as it is today are the people that are, you know, tied to the status quo. So,
well, they're profiting from it, too. The people that are profiting from it.
Yeah, one at a time, guys. Go ahead, John.
That's right. And so the point is that if Americans for decades have been told to fear this feature in our Constitution, this way of coming together, then we have to do something to show Americans that it's not dangerous. And that's what we're trying to do in Sacramento on the first week of December, is to get Americans there on their own dime, paying it for themselves, so that shows through in the documentary that they mean business, they really do care about their society, they care about what's happening, and they know what's going to happen if we don't do something about it. So the point is to document a convention. And, of course, there will be poignant moments, there will be humorous moments, there will be all the things we say on these calls, all these blog talk radio calls that we all go to and stuff. Those things will be said visually. And I don't know if anyone here has seen the documentary American Autumn about the Occupy movement. Great documentary. So we make a documentary like that, but not about Occupy, but about the actual solution, which is a federal convention on the authority of the Constitution, so we can find our common ground and put amendments out to the people to ratify.
Okay, John.
All right.
Hold on.
So I leave
it
at that.
No. Stay on. I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you. Right. I'll give you a chance to give your website. First of all, have you seen the Move to Amend Legalizing Democracy documentary that we made for Move to Amend?
I have not seen that documentary, no.
All right, please go to my website and go to the Move to Amend section and watch the documentary. That's very important. Because I think you've been on before where you kind of made a point that you thought Move to Amend wasn't in support of a constitutional convention, which I think I explained to you, first of all, was not true. Secondly, I think it is important that there's not a difference between all of us wanting money out of politics. But with you and Dan concentrating on saying or stating that we should worry about the things that we agree with in common and get this one goal done, and because we have this in common, there is a validity to that, but there is a distinct problem. You ask a woman whose rights are being taken away from her today, which is more important? That constitutional convention or that right? You take a person who is being limited, their vote is being limited. What is more important? I am not done. Hold on. One at a time, I'm not done making my point. It is
the right
this important.
Comes through a convention. It
this
comes
is important.
Through a convention. It's not going to come through the forces that are dividing us.
John, I understand what you're saying, but what I'm trying to tell you is that if you want to reach people, and that is why Move to Amend is not against what you're talking about, John, with a constitutional convention, but we understand that there's a hell of a lot of work that has to go into a people's movement, because while you are very well versed in the Constitution, while you are very well versed in money and politics, to the very average American citizen, and this is not a question of conjecture. This is things that we've actually polled. Americans don't know what the hell you're talking about. And the thing about it is, So a lot of this has to come with what we are doing here on Blog Talk Radio. When you come out here and you talk to me about that convention that you want to have, I am with you. But I'm telling you, we need more. When Dan says, let's stick on things that we are in common with, I'm telling Dan, I agree with Dan, I agree with you, but we got to do more. Because when you have that woman whose rights next week will be taken out of play here in Texas or in North Carolina, you're not going to be getting to them to no damn convention. They're not coming to your convention. They're worried about your rights now.
Your point, Egberto. Let me reply to that.
Please do.
What's your point? I understand where your position is. Your rebuttal to that is that the forces that are in power are creating all these symptoms, including judicial activism, which would intend to reverse Roe versus Wade, et cetera, all these things,
right.
All these concerns, right? Those forces do whatever they can to keep us divided. That's how they rule. So if we started advocating for a convention, then that would do the trick. Now, in order to get what you said earlier, that you've polled it, that Americans don't know what the hell we're talking about when we talk about a convention, okay, well, let's hold a convention, document it with living, breathing Americans, so that we can float it out there and say, look, this is what this thing is.
John, did you hear me? I said I'm with you.
I'm not done yet. Please.
Okay, go ahead.
So we can finally show people what this thing is. Once the people are shown what this thing is, it's over. They will have to call it. They're already on the verge of calling it right now. And then that's evidenced by the Congressional Research Service issuing a two-part white paper all about the Article 5 Convention and telling members of Congress how to view the situation. So if we make this documentary, we get a chance to get it in the minds of Americans, both from the left and the right, to say, look, we have to come together, folks. Everyone's got an idea of what they think should be done, but until we all come to the table, nobody's going anywhere. So we get
got
that
you.
Idea out there. In order to do that, Egberto, we need right now people like you, people like David Cobb, people like Michelle, who are in touch with hundreds or thousands of people to say, look, folks, we have this event going on in December. If you can make it there, get there, because we need to help show other Americans what this thing looks like. So
John,
I'm
rest
you,
assured you will have the support. I'm telling you, you will have the support. All I try to illustrate with both you and Dan is that you have to be more cognizant on just that one singular focus. That's all. I'm saying you have us already, but you cannot have that singular focus and says, well, let's just work on things that we can share in common, because what you've done there is you've left out a whole lot of people. We can do them both. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I don't think you're recognizing the dynamics that as soon as we do talk about the things that divide us, that's where the conversation about change stops. So in this instance, in reality, and everything we have to deal with, everything we have available to us to work with, we do actually, like Dan said, he's correct, we do actually have to stop talking about the divisive stuff long enough to get a convention so we can propose amendments that Congress never will.
I want to get John back in. John from San Antonio, because I know John has something to say here. John from San Antonio, come on in.
I don't want to repeat myself from the last time, but I mean, my understanding is that the Congress has to call this convention. Is that correct, John?
It's correct. That rule of law, the Congress shall call the convention.
Right, and it's not just that they have to call it. It has to be called by 2/3 of each House of Congress.
The legal requirement for the convention call has been satisfied by the states hundreds of times over.
Hundreds of times.
The congressional record shows 49 states have cast over 700 applications for the Article 5 convention, and one session of Congress after the next illegally prevents the Constitution from operating as intended by denying the people their right to a federal convention of the states.
I've never heard of that happening. Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I just
why don't
have
you
to
give
say
John
I'll
your
apologize.
Website?
Well, the website, if you want all the information as to fact and law, that's Friends of the Article 5 Convention. I was a co-founder of that group with Bill Walker and Judge Tom Brennan, who's also the founder of the Cooley School of Law. That's for all the facts in the PDF files, the database from the Congressional Record showing all those applications. That's also on that website. But really, guys, I'm telling you, Congress is they are aware that Americans are talking about this. And if we can just get enough people together for a short time to document it, to voice, I mean, John, all you guys, everyone on this call would be an awesome delegate. And all you'd have to do is build consensus with the other Americans in that room, and then we'll go have some drinks afterwards, and that'll be a wrap.
I'd like to make a point here. The one guy I did hear talking about this is this ultra right-wing guy, Mark Levin. Levin, okay. I mean, would I want the constitutional protections that I think are great, which is most of the Constitution I think is pretty good, do I want some guy who's an extremist taking away those rights? And the answer is absolutely not. And the fact is, I mean, can I finish my point?
Yeah.
I'd like to finish my point. Is that the fact is that there is no way, and I said this before, that two-thirds of Congress is ever going to agree to this convention. And the last time two-thirds of Congress was actually held by one party, otherwise, if they hold this convention, it's just going to be a stalemate. Nothing is ever going to get passed. So why would one side want to basically, have a constitutional convention that could possibly throw out things like the First Amendment, the right to free speech, and all of these things that are absolutely necessary and have been a part of American history since 1789. Why would they do that? And the answer is, it would never happen. It's never going to happen. And I wouldn't even want to see it happen, even if during the 30s, when the Democrats actually had a two-thirds majority in both houses, when Roosevelt was in office from 33 to 36, I believe he did have a two-thirds majority in both houses during that time. Would you want him to have a convention and basically put all strictly liberal, throw out everything from the entire Constitution and replace it with something that is only liberal? I mean, I'm a very far left wing person, but I wouldn't want to see that happen. And I think there's absolutely no way that this is going to happen.
May I rebut what you've said? You've said some things that are incorrect, factually incorrect. Okay?
All right, go
ahead. Number one, John, as far left as you are, I hope you still believe that this government that we currently have with the three branches, that it's of, by, and for the people. I mean, am I correct that you still believe that?
I think it's what people, what people, the knowledge that people have, that's what it's based on. So if you have an uninformed populace, you're going to have a lot of bad politicians, and I think that's what we have right now. So, it's by the people, by the uninformed people to a large degree. So, but also money. I mean, I agree with you as far as the aspect of money.
I'm trying to rebut what you said, John, okay? So can we just do that real quick? I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste anyone's time.
All right, John, go ahead and talk.
You said Mark Levin, some radical right-wing guy who's a conservative talk show host. I actually spoke with him recently about this. But he is from the right, and he's saying we should convoke a federal convention so we can propose amendments. Now, what you did and what Americans have been taught to do is to jump from the discussion phase, the deliberative phase of amendment, to the ratification phase, as if it's all one same thing. And it's not. It's the discussion, the national discussion, which we all are dying to have, and then it's the ratification. Now, the ratification, the reason it's so important for you to understand this, is because it's mathematically impossible for the society to harm itself in this process, because the principle of a three-quarter supermajority of the people is required before an idea becomes law. Now, you yourself said earlier on this call that we're more divided than we've been since the Civil War. You are correct. We are very divided. What that means is that nothing is going to be ratified that can't get all of one side of the political spectrum signed on, plus at least half the other. So you see, the three-quarter supermajority principle that is set down in the Constitution virtually assures us that nothing is going to be ratified that is not of, by, and for the people. So I hope you can erase all this stuff that we've been taught about the convention. It's untrue. When you talk about the guys in 1787 in Independence Hall in Philadelphia, they put down all these rights in the Constitution. And the ultimate right, the right that's more important than the right to complain about your government, is the right to alter it when it stops operating in our interests. That right is embodied in the Convention Clause of Article 5. It is our ultimate right as a people, as Americans. When we actually get the convention, you say we have a lot of uninformed Americans, guess what the convention's going to do? It's going to have us all sit down and publicly examine the Constitution and talk about what we need to add to it. That's what's going to happen. So it's going to re-educate an entire generation or two or three in one fell swoop. The bottleneck to this whole thing is people are still being afraid of it. So if we get together a whole bunch of folks in Sacramento in December in the Capitol building just for 2 or 3 days and simply document ourselves holding a convention and having someone like you go on at length espousing what you believe and have clips of that together all in a documentary about Americans, that will blow the bottleneck. That will be the final straw that breaks the camel's back that forces Congress to issue the call. Because the reason they will call it is proof of this is there are things in Washington, D.C. that they don't talk about. So if there's things they don't talk about because they can't, because it will piss off too many Americans, that means if enough Americans say, hey, we're unafraid of doing this thing, and in fact we recognize we have to do it because you guys aren't doing the job. They will call it, and
I'm
there.
Progression. Yeah, I've been pretty quiet. Can I ask John a question?
Before John, Michelle called in, so let Michelle go.
I'm sorry,
then you can
Michelle.
Go ahead.
I yield the floor to the great lady from the great state of Texas.
Y'all can go back and forth about that all you want to, but I believe essentially the major sickness in this country is the lack of civic engagement. I mean, for our government to work, our people have to vote. And it's our job right now, because we've been brainwashed for 30-plus years, that our vote doesn't count. And they've also taken steps to make it more difficult. Correct? And
I agree.
Before I go, I would at least like to ask the women of Texas, or, you know, just the people of Texas, to go to votetexas.gov, register to vote, need ID, and read what they have to say. Read what you have to be prepared before you go to the poll. You know, but make darn sure that you follow up. If there's any discrepancies, anything, go to my Facebook page, send me a personal message, and I'll do what I can to help you. I have contacts throughout the state. We can follow up. We can make sure that this is taken care of. And if you're not, you know, if there's something illegal going on, we can report it. There's things that can be done.
All right, Michelle, no, make sure to take some pictures for me.
Oh, tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but all of the things that y'all are talking about doing isn't going to happen until we get a party in there that's willing to legislate the laws and put the laws in place to make it happen. And right now, if you, I mean, I'm all for three parties. I'm all, you know, I've been to check. They have like 12 parties. I'm all for that. But right now, in this day and time, I don't believe it's realistic. And
okay,
that's all I have to say. I have to sign off. Love talking with y'all.
Thank you for calling in, Michelle.
Okay, you take care.
All right, Dan, you wanted to ask a question.
Well, yeah, and I want to preface the question with this very blunt statement. Closed-mindedness, like what Michelle just said, in a very, I mean, she was like my hero until she said, it's not realistic. Just like John, it's not realistic. So, okay, John, here's
whatever.
My question. So fix it. So how do we fix it? How do we fix it, John? Calling a constitutional convention is not the way to fix what's wrong with our government. How do we fix it?
Okay. Well,
Can I say something, Dan?
Yeah.
Dan, I want to interrupt you for a second because what Michelle said actually was very, very important. And this is not to take anything away from John DeHerrera, right? From California. One of the reasons that you don't see Move to Amend jump on the, just out there promoting constitutional convention is because we think things work better when you have an educated populace, okay? So it has nothing to do with disagreements with what you want to do. I actually think it would be what he's going to do in Santa Barbara is going to be a good thing because I think you're saying, John DeHerrera, that you're going to put a video together so that people can see what a mock-up would look like. I mean, there are a lot of things. When John from Senate,
hang on. When Michelle says a third party is not realistic or 12 parties is not realistic, you and I, how many times have we done this math, Egberto? 47%, right, voted for Romney, 63% for the president. But we all know what that really, those numbers really mean. 60 million people voted for the president, 63 million voted for the president, 60 million voted for Romney, and 90 million didn't vote, which means a third party is obviously, it's not only possible, it's mathematical certainty.
No.
it's a mathematical certainty that it is realistic. But see, when people say something isn't realistic, that's the kind of stinking thinking that stops progress altogether. That's the thing. When people naysay John and his idea, is it a grand idea? It is a grand idea. I don't think there's a bigger idea out there to fix our government than having a convention. But for people to just say, it's not realistic
stop.
And just dismiss it, is ridiculous.
Moderator, stop. Here's the deal. I think you're misrepresenting what Michelle said, and you're misrepresenting when somebody, even what John from San Antonio says. When they say it's not realistic, they are all saying it's not realistic now. And note what I told John DeHerrera. I said, and I think I've said this several weeks in a row, I am for trying all kinds of things. What I said that we need to do is educate people. And if you take a look at what we are doing with Move to Amend, is we have Dave Cobb, we have Ashley Sanders, we have Caitlin Soposhi Belknap out there in the field educating. It's nonpartisan education, getting people to know how things work, getting people involved, trying to get. And the reason that it's important is the mere fact that you've just told me, Dan and DeHerrera, that when I can hear the upset in your voice when you say, It just about gets you mad when it says, when people said it's not realistically, come on, I can see it. But it doesn't matter if you can see it. Everybody else has to also. And that is what groups like Move to Amend and hopefully Coffee Party as well as we do here is what we're trying to do. I am not dismissing anything that either one of you said. And I don't think I heard Michelle dismiss it. And I don't think I heard John in San Antonio dismiss it. They put realistic things that are current today. We have our work cut out for us, is all they're saying. Go ahead.
I'm still waiting to hear John, our friend from San Antonio is going to fix things.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that Move to Amend is great. I think, I mean, I've actually personally, last summer, I went to the local Texas representative and I went to them to sign them up for Move to Amend, and I was successful to get three of them signed up. I'm surprised Leticia Vandeput didn't sign up, but so I am very much in favor of Move to Amend, and I am very much in favor of other movements to amend the Constitution when it is necessary. But what kind of makes me concerned when you just say, you know, we want to have a constitutional convention and people don't talk about what they want to change. I mean, I could see somebody like Mark Levin wanting to change the 14th Amendment, you know, because he's so conservative, because, you know, he doesn't like the fact that that African Americans were given rights. And I could see, you know, other people that are really extreme, like Mark Levin is, making the Constitution obsolete, including the right to free speech. And so
let him finish one at a time.
No, but John's asking the right question, Egberto. Are those extremists, do they equal, if you add them all up, can you get three-quarters of those of the country? Will they constitute three-quarters of the country? Ever?
No,
will the Mark Levines of the world
not
ever
right
be three-quarters of the country?
Not right now. I mean, and so I mean, it's good to have – I mean, I don't understand why we just can't have a political conversation, have and state your ideas, and not be worried about whether you're called a partisan or not. And we have elections, and then, like, I'm definitely, you know, in favor of overturning Citizens United. It's a really hard task to do, but I'm in favor of doing that. But I don't think that everything, the whole Constitution, should be up on the table. I mean,
then you're going to like what Coffee Party's about to do, because we're going to get behind Represent Us, and we're going to get involved. And are you familiar with Represent Us and the Anti-American Corruption Act?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
I mean,
check it out, because we're you're right. Getting money out of politics is the first thing we need to do. And Egberto, I'm sorry to be repetitive, and this last time I'll say it on your show, I promise. If we keep talking about the things that divide us, then it gets very noisy, and there is no conversation. Conversation breaks down, and we cannot unite to do that. So all I'm saying is, let's just call it temporary truce. Unite, get money out of politics, then we can go back to our sides, and we can rationally, and with a representative voice in Washington, D.C. that we do not have now because they're all bought and paid for, we can actually have a voice, and we can sit down as rational human beings and talk things through.
Let me answer it this way, and I have to come to 347 real quickly after I answer it this way. We ought to be able, as adults, to walk and chew gum, and I think in my circle here, I've found a manner of doing that just fine. I think, and not only in my circle here, but in large parts of the Coffee Party segment, I think people have been matured in that regard. And I think it is our job in Coffee Party to help people reach that level of maturity, because here's my biggest concern, as I've always stated. And before I give you a chance to answer, I'm going to go to 3-4 cents. My biggest concern with folks is that they don't understand that as soon as you got what you had in common together and you accomplished something in common, you get the Yugoslavification of your society, because that's the Yugoslavia model. I'll talk to you about that afterwards, but let me bring in 347. 347, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Yes, Egberto, this is Aperith. I've called in a couple of times before. I think you probably remember I called in, I guess it was 2 months ago, and I was telling you that I was, you know, I'm a guy in my 20s. I know a bunch of people in their 20s, and they're, you know, excited about signing up for Obamacare, and that,
right,
you know, there was this feeling that, oh, no, none of us are going to sign up because we're young and we think we're invincible. And,
what was your name again, sir?
Aberith, A-B-R-I-T-H.
Yes, I remember you, because I asked you that as well the last time. Go ahead, my friend.
Well, I mean, this is slightly off topic, but I mean, you know, not too far. I'm just curious as to, you know, some of the Tea Party people that I see, actually, I don't agree with them, but they're not racist people. They're not sexist people. They're not trying to be divisive. They just happen to believe in something I don't believe. And I can never understand why those rational people don't attack the crazy people in the Tea Party.
You know, and those are the kinds of things that when Dan says we have to work on things that we're in common with, right?
Yeah.
It is, and please take, I want folks to take this the right way, because I try not to be racial in a lot of ways, okay? But for Dan to be able to say, well, let's just put these things aside. Don't worry about how you are being demeaned in the short term, or don't worry about talking about that, because that divides. It is a hard pill for many to swallow, and what you're saying is important. When you say that, I agree with you. I have Tea Party friends. I do. And not only that, we go out and we campaign on different sides of the aisles, and we sit down and we drink coffee and we slap each other on the back, but we have different ideologies. But we talk and we're friendly. And I ask them that same question, Everett. I ask them, I say, why is it that you – in fact, I have a video out that I did of a black guy that's a Tea Party guy that I asked him about the racial issues within the Tea Party, and – It was the same thing. It was like, why don't you call them out when you? I said, how do you feel when they're saying that, and you know who you are? Well, you know, they're gonna. It's like, why is it that you don't speak up against that? Because that in itself, that silence in itself prevents you from moving forward, and that's all I try to get across. So I understand what you're saying, Everett.
Can I answer his question?
Yes, sir.
It's a very simple answer. Do you know why they don't call them out? I mean, they could if they wanted to, but you know what they can't do? They can't write a bigger check than the Koch brothers. Their voice doesn't count. That's why. Because money drowns out everything, including rational thinking.
Nobody's going to disagree with that. Nobody's going to disagree with that.
Hey, Dero, can I say something, please?
Is that John Derrera?
Yeah, 805.
Yeah, come on in.
Yeah, so what we just did is we just went in a circle. Dan and I are trying to reason with you and John that we need to come together before we're going to fix this thing. The reason it's getting worse, and the Koch brothers even exist, and they're allowed to do the things we're allowed to do today, is because they're winning. And the way they're winning, hang on, Egberto. The way they're winning is by keeping us divided. So if we want to win, we got to come together. People are afraid to come together. Okay, I understand that. I think anyone can understand that. So let's make a documentary about people coming together so we can actually show it to other people, to show them, hey, this is what it looks like. So people like John in San Antonio will never again say, if we have a convention, Mark Levin's going to make the Constitution into something I don't like, because that's an irrational fear.
Let me stop you there. I got to stop you there. Let me tell you why I'm stopping you, because I think what you're saying is not quite correct. I think everybody here already understands what you're saying. Not only do they understand what you're saying, they support what you're saying, and they want you to go ahead and do what you're saying. And I really do not see why you just don't go do it. If you have something that you would like a participation from using my program, other Dan's program, other programs, tell us what you want to do. Now, I'm going to tell you what you won't get out of somebody like me. And what you won't get out of somebody like me is acquiescing to what I will always consider false divisiveness, and that is, you will never reach enough people if some of the people within that system feel marginalized. I am telling you, because I've done this, I've worked it. I can go into a room with people I disagree with ideologically and work on something together. It is immature if we think that we cannot have ideological differences and argue about ideological differences and come together on a common goal like money and politics. It's not that it's not forgetting the side issues that's keeping us apart. It's the intrinsics within a lot of the people that are within the movement that are stopping that that realization. Because you take a look at a group like ours at Move to Amend, we go from very left to somewhere. There's one person I don't quite say, but I call right of center, and come together for a common purpose, and that is possible. But I tell you what, we're out of time, so what I'm going to do is ask you one at a time to give me 15 seconds, starting with Greg. 15 seconds, Greg.
Great show, Egberto. Thanks as always. Talk to you next week.
Thank you very much, Greg. And by the way, the control of this show was exactly in your spirit, my brother, and I hope we succeeded. Dan, up.
I want John's information. I want to go to his convention. How do I get in touch with him?
Okay, Dan, are you on? Well, Dan can tell you. Let's go to John DeRera.
Yeah, Dan, the website is conventionsacramento.org, conventionsacramento.org, and you can contact me through email there. Egberto, I'd like to be able to contact you. I tried to contact you after the show last week, but you're like impossible to get a hold of. And
why
I just
is that?
Want to get a phone. To what you
Egberto
said.
At Egberto. Well, let me just stop you. Egberto at EgbertoWillis.com. You should have no problem contacting me. You can friend me on Facebook as well.
Maybe you missed it. So anyways, look, the reason I'm coming to MTA and these other groups is because we need people at that convention. So I'm asking you to help educate. You say you part of the MTA is to educate. Guess what? Making a documentary is one of the best ways to help educate in this audiovisual day and age. So I'm asking for the help of MTA to get some living, breathing Americans to that convention, if possible.
Again, as I told you, you have the support. I'll do, but again, telling me on the radio, Egberto, I want support is not enough. You send me information as far as what, when, where, all that good stuff. Then we'll talk, John. I'm serious about that. I think I have nothing against what you're doing, and I'm willing to work with you.
Okay, as I understand it, you have not seen the website. Can you please look at conventionsacramento.org and flip
yes,
an email from there?
May I ask you to send me an email, sir?
Okay, I'll send you an email. And I appreciate the show, and I appreciate the time of everyone on the call, and we're moving forward. Let's try and win this thing.
Thank you, John.
Over
you
now.
Take care. You take care, buddy. Everett, come on in. Oops, I turned you off by mistake. Ha. Come on in, Everett.
I listened to the whole show today, and I wasn't sure I was going to call in, but when I started hearing the Tea Party talk, I figured I'd call in. And about what Michelle was saying about not being able to talk to people who have the different views that she has. I mean, I talk to the people, but it's painful. So I understand what she's saying. Anyway, thank you for having me on the show again, and, you know, have a nice week.
Hey, thank you very much. And please keep calling and share the blog so that other people can listen to the podcast and feel free to visit and know that we have a forum that everybody is respected. Everybody gets a chance to talk. Thank you very much for coming by.
Hey, thank you.
John from San Antonio.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the ACA. I just want to have people, you know, keep signing up for it. You know, don't be discouraged. And just get the insurance, and hopefully it'll help people out. As far as the convention, you know, you said I was, you know, I don't remember the exact words, but it was a negative connotation about Mark Levin. You know, Mark Levin is a very dangerous person. He is
yes,
a very
is.
Scary person. And, you know, this is one of the things that the Tea Party wants to – one of the things that they want to eliminate. I forgot the amendment. I should know it.
Hey, guy,
you only
got 15 seconds because
okay,
I messed up with my time.
Okay, I believe it's the 18th Amendment, though. It eliminates actual people from voting for U.S. senators. They want that to be put by the state legislatures. That actually really promotes cronyism. So, I mean, that seems like a real contradiction, and I hope that's not on some
okay,
of
John,
the agenda of
I
some
have
of these
60
people.
Seconds to get my promo in, so thank you very much for
okay.
calling as usual, and you know, please call next week. We're going to continue with this. Folks, Remember, Coffee Party has four radio shows, and we're adding one. I don't have the information for the one we're adding yet, but it's on Sundays, and I think somewhere around 2 o'clock. Check our site. On Mondays, we have Press One for Democracy with Dan Aronson, that radical that you just heard on my show. Actually, Dan is a great guy. On Tuesdays at 8 p.m., you have The Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric. It's currently on hiatus, but it'll be back. On Thursdays at 3 p.m., you have Lunch with Loudon. Lunch with Loudon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursdays. And, of course, on Saturdays, you're here with Egberto Willis, Politics Done Right, yours truly. Thank you very much for spending this time with me. Please keep coming back. Please invite your friends to come. We want to change this country. We all have different ideas, but together we will do it. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful Saturday.